When news breaks, go beyond the headlines with the new MSNBC app. Get real-time analysis from live blogs to in-depth essays, video highlights from your favorite shows and hosts, and the latest updates on the 2024 election. Go beyond the what to understand the why. Download the app now at msnbc.com/app.
Senator Cruz told the Attorney General you should be prosecuted.
Yeah. I have to laugh at that. I should be prosecuted. What happened on January 6th, Senator?
Yeah, there is new information on the investigation into the Capitol attack and this emerging variant of the coronavirus. We've got our go-to doctors lined up for the very latest on what Americans need to know about the evolving threat. Plus, what those COVID concerns mean for the economy. A live report from CNBC is just moments away. Capitol Hill, meanwhile, has its own economic issues to deal with, namely a looming deadline to lift the debt ceiling and to fend off a government shutdown. Good morning and welcome to Morning Joe. It is Monday, November 24th. Hope you all had a good Thanksgiving weekend. With us, we have, it's the 29th. What am I saying? It's the 29th. Happy Monday, everyone. With us, we have the host of Way Too Early and White House bureau chief at Politico, Jonathan Lemire, and member of the New York Times editorial board, Mara Gay, is with us. Good to have you both on board this morning. As we look at countries around the world scrambling to contain a new strain of COVID-19, since being discovered in South Africa, the Omicron variant has spread to neighboring African countries and a number of other nations across the globe. Canadian officials say the variant has reached North America, with two cases appearing in Ontario. Later this morning, President Biden is expected to give the nation an update on his administration's response. Members of the White House COVID response team briefed the president yesterday and warned it could take 2 weeks before there is definitive information on the characteristics of the new variant. Here's some of what Dr. Anthony Fauci said yesterday about the Omicron strain of COVID-19.
It just kind of exploded in the sense that when you look in South Africa, you were having a low level of infection, and then all of a sudden there was this big spike. And when the South Africans looked at it, they said, oh my goodness, this is a different virus than we've been dealing with.
Yeah.
So it clearly is giving indication that it has the capability of transmitting rapidly. That's the thing that's causing us now to be concerned, but also to put the pressure on ourselves now to do something about our preparation for this.
When you have a virus that has already gone to multiple countries, inevitably it will be here. The question is, will we be prepared for it? And the preparation that we have ongoing for what we're doing now with the Delta variant just needs to be revved up. And that's the bottom line of that, is the preparation by getting more and more people vaccinated and getting the fully vaccinated boosted.
It seems very responsible, doesn't it? In fact, Jonathan Lemire, the Biden administration moved quickly, as did the EU, as did a lot of other countries. They restricted travel from South Africa, seven other countries starting today. And you know, the restrictions are also being added in several other countries. Morocco is going to suspend all incoming flights for 2 weeks. That's Morocco. Israel banned all foreign nationals from entering their country on Sunday. Makes sense. Japan followed suit. That's going to start tomorrow. But, you know, Jonathan, it's so fascinating. There's certain Republicans. So the Biden administration responds like, you know, EU, their recommendations, Morocco, Israel. But you go around the globe, everybody's saying, all right, well, why don't we do things right this time? And why don't we close our borders? Why don't we, from people in the affected areas, why don't we do tests? We're going to do tests and see how bad this actually is. Maybe the vaccines respond, or maybe we need to make it quite, you know, a change to some of the vaccines to make sure they hit this variant. And Republicans are freaking out. You've got Ronny Jackson, the man who said Donald Trump could live to be 200 years old. We got Ronny Jackson, turned MAGA congressman, tweeting, quote, Here comes the MEV, the midterm election variant. They need a reason to push unsolicited national mail-in ballots. Democrats will do anything to change. Okay, let's just stop here for a second. Because, Jonathan, as Brian Kloss, explained to poor Dr. Jackson and all the other Republicans whose heads, they're really blowing up. They're freaking out. They're acting crazier than usual. Brian Kloss said this: these people are breathtakingly stupid. This theory holds that, one, scientists in literally every other country on the planet are part of a Democratic midterm election plot to, by the way, help 20 congressmen and women get elected. And two, the Democrats believe they'd benefit from a surge of COVID cases while Joe Biden
they're pretty is powerful.
In the White House. One Republican congresswoman, Nancy Mace of South Carolina, who actually had a really bad case of COVID and went on CNN to talk about how terrible it was, and she couldn't even walk upstairs. It was horrible. She's now arguing in favor of natural immunity over COVID vaccines. Yesterday, she pointed to natural immunity as to why Florida is having a relatively low number of COVID-19 cases.
One of the things that the CDC has not done, and no policymaker at the federal level has done so far, is taken into account what natural immunity does. And that may be what we're seeing in Florida today. In some studies that I've read, natural immunity gives you 27 times more protection against future COVID infection than a vaccination. And so we need to take all of the science into account and not selectively choosing what science to follow.
I just can't hear any more of it. When Mace herself is vaccinated in April, you'll remember she told us all she had a really bad case of COVID-19 the previous summer, saying it took her 3 months to recover, and 9 months later, she still wasn't 100%. Well, I will admit the booster kind of got to me. I was kind of down for half a day. So, Jonathan Lemire, Republicans, I was going to say, have lost their mind. It seems a bit. Seems a bit repetitive, doesn't it? They have freaked out at this new variant as the Biden administration, it seems, be going step by step, just like the EU, just like other countries, being responsible, while Republicans freak out and say this is launched in a lab to help 2025 members of Congress win their races next year. That must be news to the fine people of Morocco who want to know why their government is implementing bans, as well as Israel, to help some members in the Tidewater region of Virginia.
Joe, if this is a secret Democratic plot, it's a pretty bad one and requires certainly a remarkable amount of global reach to pull off. I mean, these comments are obviously nonsensical and irresponsible from Republicans. There's a lot, of course, we don't know yet about this new variant. It sort of emerged seemingly out of nowhere over the long holiday weekend and certainly rattled stock markets, drove great concern among Americans who gathered with family this weekend over Thanksgiving. And of course, the Biden administration is now scrambling to respond. The president spent the holiday in Nantucket, flew back to the White House yesterday, convened a meeting of his COVID task force to figure out what to do next. He will be addressing the nation in a few hours on this new variant. We are seeing countries across the globe, as you mentioned, impose some travel restrictions, even though the WHO, the World Health Organization, is counseling against that, at least for now. But this is, unfortunately, inevitable that when there are pockets of unvaccinated people, whether that be here in the United States or huge swaths of the globe that haven't yet been able to get a shot, those in the U.S., of course, the vaccines are readily available. People are choosing not to do so. For much around the world, these are people who simply haven't had the ability to get one or two doses yet and forget a booster. That this is what's going to happen. A new variant would emerge. And it is too early to say. We won't know for a couple of weeks whether or not the vaccines will be fully effective. The early belief is they will be, at least to some degree. Let's hope. But this is now a variant that is of concern and is going to change public policy, potentially private behavior, and is something that the Biden administration is going to come grappling with, as they simply can't shake the shadow of COVID.
And by the way, they're going to go at it responsibly, reasonably. even as Republicans freak out. It'd be really good if Mitch McConnell, who's always been responsible when it came to vaccine, called out some of the people who are saying that this is a conspiracy, a Democratic conspiracy. It's so reckless and dangerous. And Mara, of course, you also have had COVID in the past. It had quite an impact on you. I'm sure hearing someone else who had a bad case of COVID and then going out and telling the good people of South Carolina that they'd be better off just having a horrible case of COVID like she had and you had would be better than just getting a shot.
It's incredibly irresponsible. I mean, one of the things it does beyond the politics, right, is it makes it even harder for public health officials to do their job. And so all across America now, we're going to have Americans who say, well, I don't need the shot because my congresswoman said I have natural immunity, so I don't have to worry about it, let alone to protect anybody else who hasn't been infected yet or doesn't have a vaccination. So it's extremely irresponsible. I also wonder, and I actually don't know in this case, so I don't want to speculate about an individual's personal health, but I will say that for those of us who got sick before there were medications like Regeneron, it's even more frustrating to hear individuals, slander science and the best minds that have our public health in interest. All, you know, they're doing that, but then when they do get sick, they go to the hospital to get the best treatment that, by the way, many of us didn't have access to. And so it's extremely discouraging. I also just want to say that this really should motivate us as a country to push pharmaceutical companies even harder than we already have. And the Biden administration has been good on this so far, but could be even tougher, to push those pharmaceutical companies to open up their patents to get access to vaccines all around the world. It is doubly tragic that this is coming out of South Africa, which for so many years was devastated and continues to be by the AIDS epidemic. You know, even though they were delayed in getting those life-saving HIV cocktails. And this is just a continuation of that. We really need to get global access to this vaccine. This idea that we can isolate and take care of ourselves and that we'll just be fine is clearly untrue. And this should really light a fire under us.
In many ways, I mean, those pushing conspiracy theories and pushing against vaccines when they've had one, very Trumpy. I mean, it's very much politically having it both ways, but making sure you serve yourself and not caring at all about the health of the people you're talking to. Joining us now, director for the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy and professor in the medical school at the University of Minnesota, Dr. Michael Osterholm. Dr. Osterholm, if you could give us the bottom line on the Omicron variant, how dangerous is it and what is the potential that it comes to the United States?
Well, thank you. Good morning. Let me just be really clear. This is real, it's immediate, and it is a real danger. And those three words all together sum just what we know to date. We want to be very careful not to create a sense it's worse than it is. But at the same time, I think all the information we have about the virus, what we're now seeing happen in South Africa, what you've seen spread around the world, this virus is highly infectious, and it may very well, in fact, compromise how well our vaccines work against it.
So what is that the difference we know so far about Omicron? Like when the Delta came about, it was much more transmissible than the initial version. Yeah. It could break through the vaccine for a lot of people who are vaccinated. Do we know anything else about it?
Yes, we do. And what we know is the fact that if you look at the history of variants, and the very first one that we were really concerned about was the Alpha variant that first showed up in the United Kingdom a year ago right now. And that woke us up to the fact that these variants could function very differently than previous versions of the virus. And they fell into one of three buckets. One, was it more transmissible? Two, did it cause more severe illness? And three, could it compromise our immune protection from vaccines or natural infection? Well, it turns out that the transmissibility bucket was the important one. That's the one that continued to dominate and become the virus king of the hill. The variants that basically compromised the immune response didn't make it. The gamma and the beta versions that we had seen actually in South Africa and South America. This one combines both transmissibility and the potential ability to interfere with the vaccines. So you get both of them now. And what we're seeing happen in South Africa is this virus initially is hands down beating out Delta. So it's very likely it could become king of the hill soon and then have these other dangerous parts of it also contained within that virus.
So, Doctor, what should the United States government do? I know we moved on travel restrictions fairly quickly this past weekend. Should we are we moving to see how effective the vaccine is against this? What about the Pfizer pills that we've gotten out? Are we going to be testing those to see how effective they are against this variant?
Well, first of all, I understand the U.S. government's efforts to limit transportation out of South Africa to other parts of the world, particularly our country. But as you're seeing right now, it's in at least 17 countries. I am certain it's here in the United States. We just haven't detected it yet. Mm-hmm. And I think by the end of the month, we're going to see most countries in the world already having this virus. So I think you'll soon see that travel bans are not going to be the answer. It's going to be more testing people before they cross borders. But what I can tell you is the administration is actively working right now with the vaccine manufacturers to understand, is in fact this virus potentially going to have some impact on how well the vaccines work. And one of the points you just made in your conversations about reinfections, one of the things that was notable in South Africa was how many people who are now infected with this virus who are reinfected, meaning they had previously been infected, and the protection from that particular illness did not protect them against this virus. So and the other thing the administration is doing is just doubling down on getting people vaccinated. You know, I don't think many people realize that this week we have fewer people protected against this virus or any of the COVID viruses since the in the last several months. And the reason for that is we now have over 125 million Americans who have been boosted or who have had their vaccine at least 6 months or more ago, were now becoming susceptible again and are not getting boosted. Of that 125 million who are now eligible for boosters, only 37 million have gotten it. These people are now again becoming at risk for getting infected. We got to get them boosted. So, that's what the administration is trying to do.
Okay. And then on Omicron, how much does a country being fully vaccinated matter? Meaning, will this come here if it's brought here or already be here as you suspect, regardless of people being vaccinated?
Well, it may actually have still some real public health implications, even if you're fully vaccinated, because we don't know that it is going to be necessarily fully protective. But what we do know from studies with vaccines in South Africa and South America, when those strains, the beta and gamma I mentioned earlier, that did have the same ability to potentially cause what we call immune escape, the vaccines still were relatively highly effective in limiting serious illness and deaths. So, you know, at this point, I'd rather take an infection than dying. And so getting more people vaccinated will surely have a big impact that way. But we can't guarantee that it's not going to mean that this virus isn't going to spread in a place like the United States.
All right, Dr. Michael Osterholm, thank you so much. Very good, as always,
thank you,
to have you with us. And as the good doctor said, everybody, just let's just listen to what he said. We don't know right now. So we don't know how aggressively it will transmit across the United States, probably fairly aggressively if it gets here. But we still don't know, and we won't know for some time about the vaccines and the impact on this. But certainly, as the doctor said, if you play the odds, you certainly want to get that vaccine. And for those that haven't had a vaccine in 6, 7, 8 months, get a booster. Because, see, here's the thing. We're still learning, as is the case with every disease, as has been the case with pandemics. You learn as you move along. And I'm sorry this freaks out some Republicans and freaks out some of my friends who send me emails freaked out. Oh, now we have, yes, it's called a virus. It transforms itself, and we have to be smart enough to keep up with it. And it really would help if Americans would work together instead of, especially doctors, instead of doctors going out spreading lies that actually hurt their constituents. So, speaking of questions and the unknown,
Stock and oil prices appear to be bouncing back this morning. They plunged over the weekend amid new COVID fears rattling stock markets. And President Biden encouraged shoppers to consider small business shopping over the weekend. He also tried to quell concerns about stubbornly high gas prices.
He tweeted in part, "It will take time, but before long, you should see the price of gas drop where you fill up your tank." Let's bring in CNBC's Dominic Chu, who's been following this. Dom, what do we know at this point?
So, Mika, the issue is that there are more questions than answers right now. But in times when there are more questions than answers, investors, traders oftentimes sell and then ask questions later. They want to seek those answers later on. That's the kind of action that you saw on Friday. The issue this morning is there's still going to be issues about whether or not we know anything new about Omicron. The stuff that got hit the hardest were echoes of what happened during the pandemic a year and a half ago. It's travel and leisure companies that took some of the biggest hits, oil and gas companies, on that fear that demand will slow down if the economy, not just here, but elsewhere around the world, slows down as well. But investors are at the same time trying to figure out some of the things that Dr. Michael Osterholm just talked about. We don't know yet whether or not there is any kind of an issue with transmissibility. Is it better or worse? What are the symptoms like? Right. All of those things are being handicapped in real time right now. What it comes down to for many of the traders right now coming in on this Monday after that holiday shortened day that we had on Friday is they're trying to play catch up with whether or not the sell-off that we saw on Friday was a little bit overblown, which is the reason why you're seeing a bounce back in oil prices this morning, a bounce back in some of those economically sensitive companies that tend to do better when the overall economy does well. Think travel and leisure, think hotels, restaurants, bars, that sort of thing, guys. That's the real issue for many investors right now.
All right. CNBC's Dominic Chu, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. And Jonathan Lemire talking about this vast conspiracy that idiots on the internet, especially doctors on the internet that are in politics, are trying to push out that this is just a Democratic conspiracy. How fascinating that people traded, you know, billions of dollars on Friday and dumped stocks based on this conspiracy theory. It's again, it's just again, the stupidity is remarkable. And I guess you have to lay the stupidity at the feet of the people who actually would believe the stupid lies, because it's all out there. Do people in Texas, in Ronnie Jackson's district, really believe that Moroccans are willing to let their government's policy be impacted to help somebody win an election in Virginia a year from now? Again, it's just absolute complete stupidity, but you see it across the board. And I'm hoping that Mitch McConnell and other responsible Republicans call this sort of lunacy, this reckless lunacy that actually is going to kill constituents. I hope he calls it out.
Joe, from Tokyo to Tel Aviv, global capitals are watching the purple districts outside of Richmond, Virginia.
Of course,
clearly, and clearly have an outsized interest in what happens there. The greatest question I have about Dr. Ronnie Jackson is, how did he work for President Obama? Let's remember, before he was President Trump's personal White House physician, he was President Obama's physician, and those in the Obama White House spoke really well of him. Perhaps he hit his head come Inauguration Day 2017, and he's certainly taken a dramatic and dangerous right turn. And we can make jokes, right? But like, this is dangerous stuff when, you know, someone like this floats a conspiracy theory. We know the disinformation and misinformation that's out there online, on Facebook, on other channels pushed together by your favorite Chinese religious cults, and that people believe them. People believe them. And there are people who are still, to this day, unvaccinated, refusing to get any shots, nonetheless the booster. And those are the people who are at great risk, if indeed this variant is as transmissible and potentially as dangerous as doctors seem to think.
And by the way, this conspiracy theory, this so-called conspiracy theory, it doesn't impact what did Bannon call what cosmopolitans? Elite cosmopolitans?
Yes,
it doesn't impact elite cosmopolitans. We're not the ones in the emergency rooms. We took the shots.
Yeah.
We took the boosters. That's what I don't understand, Maura. What do I have? What motivation would I have? Me, of redneck Riviera heritage to have my friends and family members infected. I want what's best for everybody, whether they're in Ronnie's district or whether they're in Mays's district. Get the shots, not because they're any global conspiracy theory. It's like, you know, Bill Gates, he doesn't have a computer chip in there to track you. Bill Gates has enough issues of his own to worry about, okay? That's what I don't get about this conspiracy theory. I just want what's best for everybody's health. You want it too, because you know how dreadful this disease is.
It's completely insane. The only thing I can think is that it's not just in red states, right? Everybody knows someone at this point who has kind of just, even if they have taken the vaccine, they're just kind of living in denial because they're happier that way. And it's less scary for them to pretend like this pandemic isn't actually still going on. And it's extremely beyond irresponsible for these Republicans to be acting this way. But they are actually supposed to be public servants. It's one thing when, like, your crazy mm-hmm. uncle is acting that way. It's a whole other thing when you took an oath to protect your constituents and uphold the Constitution of the United States, and this is how you're behaving. They're not leading by example. It's extremely reckless, and it's going to actually kill people and also kill their voters potentially, which is yet again really a short-term political strategy. I mean, if I'm being extremely cynical about it. So I really don't understand where this goes. It's going nowhere good. You just have to think, did somebody in their life, did somebody call them up and say, please stop this? You know that know people in our community who have died. Please stop.
You wonder why, Mika, because, again, the overwhelming majority of people right now are unvaccinated Americans. And they're the ones who are going to be suffering. If this new variant comes, I guarantee you, the administration and the smartest scientists in the world who created this vaccine in record time, they're working to figure out.
They are.
If there's something in this variant that needs adjusting in the vaccine, so working on it right now. So you know, I guess Maura brings up a great point. You know, from what we've all learned about conspiracy theory since it's taken such a sort of grip on Americans, is people embrace conspiracy theories because life can be messy. Like, you know, it's much easier to think, oh, there's another variant coming and we're going to have to adjust the vaccines and we may have to get another booster 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now. Much easier to think, oh, this is like Dr. Evil is working in his lab with Will Ferrell and others. There's no Austin Powers to save them. So they come up with these absolutely crazy conspiracy theories, and they will listen to freaks on Facebook that spread lies and make money spreading lies, by the way, as well as Chinese religious cults. Instead of reading like from Reuters or the Associated Press or Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal, the news there, news pages there. I don't get it. I really don't. I just want everybody to be well.
Well, we'll continue the conversation about Omicron. Still ahead on Morning Joe, a smash and grab robbery in California turns deadly when a security guard protecting a news crew was shot by thieves targeting camera gear.
It continues.
Plus, in a rare joint op-ed, ambassadors of Russia and China band together to criticize President Joe Biden. We'll also talk to member of the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol, Congressman Adam Kinzinger. We'll ask him where things stand with the subpoenas and also about Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy being forced to meet with extreme members of the Republican Party.
That's not really a good look on Kevin.
Also ahead, Broadway stars and fans alike gathered in Times Square yesterday to pay tribute to the legendary Stephen Sondheim. Tony Award-winning actress and singer Patti LuPone, who has starred in 6 Sondheim productions, will be our guest this morning. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
33 past the hour, the Supreme Court is set to hear a crucial abortion case this week that could dramatically alter decades of ruling on abortion rights in the U.S. On Wednesday, the Supreme Court will hear arguments in a Mississippi case that bans abortions after 15 weeks, long before the fetus can survive outside the womb. The case presents a direct challenge to Roe v. Wade, the landmark 1973 ruling that legalized nationwide abortions around 24 weeks. Mississippi officials are asking the court to overturn its Roe precedent. The Associated Press reports both sides are telling the Supreme Court there is no middle ground. The justices can either uphold the constitutional right to an abortion or strike it down completely. As premeditated group robberies rise across the nation, two Best Buy stores in Minnesota were hit over the weekend amid Black Friday sales. According to police, 20 to 30 people entered a Best Buy store in Burnsville near Minneapolis on Friday night while it was still open and stole an unclear number of electronics. No weapons were used and no one was injured. On the same night, 30 miles away, another group of about a dozen adults and juveniles stormed a Best Buy in Maplewood, working together to steal multiple high-value items such as TVs and hoverboards. In both cases, the perpetrators fled before police arrived, and no arrests have been made. And in California, police are searching for answers after a smash-and-grab robbery turned deadly. A security guard was shot last week while protecting a San Francisco Bay Area TV news crew covering the theft at a clothing store in Oakland. Kevin Nishida was an armed guard for Star Protection Agency and provided security for news crews in the region. He was shot in the abdomen while protecting Kron TV's camera equipment following the group robbery. A reward of $32,500 is now being offered for any information regarding Nishita's killing.
And, you know, Mika, San Francisco mayor said this is an ongoing problem that needs to be stopped. Well, it's been ongoing for quite some time. Whatever they're doing is not working. They need to up their efforts.
And coming up, the Reverend Al Sharpton joins us with his thoughts on the guilty verdicts for the men involved in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. Plus, far-right Congresswoman Lauren Boebert apologizes for the bigoted comments she made about Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, while Marjorie Taylor Greene says that the apology was unnecessary.
Of course she did. And of course, Kevin is the one crawling on his hands and knees to get support of the Congresswoman who supported the bigoted statements. That tells you where Kevin is. I wonder if contributors to Kevin and Kevin's majority pack, I wonder if they're proud of the fact that they're supporting a guy who is, in effect, endorsing bigotry. I guess they only have white customers. I don't know.
We'll look into all of that straight ahead on Morning Joe.
It was a time of pride for the gay community.
I felt like I was part of a movement to liberate ourselves.
Then came a mysterious and devastating disease.
The latest figures from Los Angeles County.
We were describing evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
This is a story of strength and resilience.
This is our deciding moment. Together, we are greater than AIDS.
Commitment to life.
Sunday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC and streaming now on Peacock.
It's a high-stakes election year, so it's not enough to just follow along. You need to understand what's happening so you are fully informed come November. Every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast, our political reporters break down important stories and backstories from the campaign trail so you understand why it matters to you. Listen to the NPR Politics Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Count one, malice murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. I'm going to ask that whoever just made an outburst be removed from the court, please.
The verdict today was a verdict based on the facts.
Yes.
Based on the evidence.
Yes.
And that was our goal, was to bring that to that jury so that they could do the right thing. Because the jury system works in this country. Mm-hmm. And when you present the truth to people and they can see it, they will do the right thing. And that's what this jury did today in getting justice for Ahmaud Arbery.
That was the prosecutor whose cross-examination of Travis McMichael helped deliver guilty verdicts in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. Joining us now, host of MSNBC's Politics Nation and president of the National Action Network, Reverend Al Sharpton, who was there as the verdict was delivered and was around the family, helping support them through this. We'll be talking more about that. Also with us, State Attorney for Palm Beach County, Dave Ehrenberg, joins us. Good to have you both with us this morning.
Reverend Sharpton, it's so great to have you here.
What an incredible day.
I can't tell you the calls and the texts and the emails from people that don't usually reach out talking about how moved they were by the words of yourself and others, the family. I just have a
Ahmaud's
quote,
mother
I have a
and
quote
father.
That you said that I think really summarizes what happened in Brunswick, Georgia so well. Let the word go forth all over the world that a jury of 11 whites and one black in the Deep South stood up in the courtroom and said that black lives do matter. And it seemed, Rev, at that moment in time, there are many people who agreed with you, not only outside that courthouse, but across the country and world, that while we don't ever want to overgeneralize a single verdict, that you believed and others believed that this could be looked upon as a turning point in some ways.
No, I believe it is important. That I agree with you, we should generalize. But I also think we ought not minimize the importance of that verdict. We are not talking about even Atlanta. We're talking about in the Deep South, Brunswick, Georgia. We're talking about a jury of 11 whites and one black in a city where 55% of the city was black. And many of us, including me, questioned the makeup of the jury. We can't get a fair verdict. We're talking about I was preparing the family for the worst. I've been in many courtrooms from Amadou Diallo to Sean Bell, on and on, where we thought the verdict should have went one way and it went another. And we're talking, Joe, a week after the verdict of Rittenhouse in Kenosha. But this mother kept saying, no, I have faith. I have faith in God. We're going to get a conviction. And I think that we must really give credit to those jurors, because you must remember now in the Deep South, 11 whites that live in that community voted against their neighbors because they looked past race and all of the racial antics of at least one of the defense attorneys and voted on the evidence. That gives hope in America. I think that all of us in civil rights and all of us that protest ought to also be just as verbal when we see people that stand up and say, wait a minute, there is the possibility of new days and new openings. And those 11 white jurors and that one black sent a significant message saying, despite the attempts to demonize black pastors and to talk about fried chicken and all, they went by the evidence and made a statement that they will have to live in that community with, and they had the courage to do it, and they ought to be given credit for that.
Well, they should be given credit for it. And it's so interesting afterwards. I think most people agreed with you that it was a turning point. There were, of course, some voices who said, oh, nothing to see here. Move along, move along. Just, I guess, as a guy that was born in Georgia, grew up in Mississippi, went to school in Alabama, grew up in Northwest Florida, a verdict like this does matter. I, as you were going through your statement where you said a jury of 11 whites and one black, and then you paused and you said, in the deep south, and somebody in the background said, good God. I just started laughing because you're right. If that verdict had come in Atlanta, I would have interpreted it a different way. It came in, though, as you said, in the deep south, in Georgia, with a history fraught with racism. And those 12 jurors together, again, 11 whites and only one black, a lot of commentators were talking about how responsibly they sorted through each charge, made sure they didn't just charge them all guilty, made sure that they looked at every count. It was a jury who did a great service, not only, I believe, to this country, but also to the rule of law, because mm-hmm. they took their charge from the judge seriously.
And the thing that, and I haven't said this even on my show, that really got to me to make me think about that was after they had read the verdict, the judge read the verdict, the defense attorney said, we want to poll the jury. And each one of them had to affirm, yes, this is my verdict. And as I sat there, I was sitting between the mother and father, and the mother had taken my hand when they were getting ready to read the verdict and started praying, and the father did. And you saw where the father jumped up after he heard the first guilty. And I'm sitting there looking at these faces of white Southerners, again, in the deep south, and one black saying, yes, that is my verdict. And you couldn't have sat in that courtroom between two parents who were not protesters, who were not public officials, who just lost their son, watching people defy what some of the defense attorneys was hoping would do, at least one of them hang the jury. They're holding on to their faith, listening to these young people and middle-aged people on that jury say, yes, I'm saying they're guilty. That was a very, very momentous occasion for me. I'll never forget, because they affirmed it. They looked at them in the face and said, you're guilty. Despite race, despite whatever culture and custom I might have come up in, you're guilty and you're going to be held accountable.
I was especially moved by the words of Ahmaud's father, who said in the simplest of terms, I don't want any family to have to go through something like this. And he really understood the broad message of the day. Mara.
Yeah, Rev, I'm so glad to see you. It's nice to see you here. I'm just wondering, this is a pretty remarkable verdict, as you pointed out. What do you take away from this? Are we going to see a shift in strategy? What worked here moving forward that you may take to other cases? You're often involved in these high profile cases. Was something different here, or is there a greater takeaway about what is possible in rural communities in which you have a majority of white jurors judging in these cases? I mean, what is this takeaway? And is this going to mark a change in strategy, or is this a vindication of some of the work that you and others have been involved in for decades now?
Well, I think that some of the takeaway is that the prosecution, I think, stayed right on the actual facts of the case. It probably would not have happened without this video. Let's not forget that the local prosecutor, Jackie Johnson, refused to arrest these three. And in fact, she has now been charged, is facing jail for interfering with this case. It took 74 days for these to be arrested. And I think when these prosecutors came in, they stayed right on the law. They did not allow the defense to bait them into a confrontation. And I think that the family took a high moral tone. They had us coming as ministers. They told us to be very spiritual about it. We did prayer vigils, and the local activists set a tone. So I think that all of that was effective. But I think at the end of the day, the country has moved more than people want to admit and say that, look, we've got to stop this us against them. The facts are the facts. And I think that all of what you asked, there's some truth in it. To quote the philosopher Joe Scarborough, both can be right at the same time. And I think that it is some of the culture is changing. I think some of the activism has paid off. But the facts are the facts are the facts. And I think that that is what worked there. And that's a strategy we ought to use. That's not to excuse the makeup of the jury. We need to look at how that is possible because it could have gone the other way. But thank God it didn't.
When you look, there's so many people to look at. You look at a judge that maintained order in his courtroom from the very beginning in a way that showed a great respect for the law. Called out both sides when both sides needed to be called out. And Jonathan Lemire, let's talk about another person who had a big impact. Larry Hobbs, a writer and reporter at the Brunswick News in Georgia, is a guy who said from the beginning, wait, this doesn't make sense. So as Ahmaud's mom was trying to get justice and you had a prosecutor dragging her feet and you basically had what we call in the South home cooking, you had a reporter that just kept saying, this doesn't make sense. And he stayed after this case as well. So there were a lot of people who were working to make sure justice was served.
He deserves a lot of credit, and this can't be said enough. Local news matters. This is why we need local newspapers. This is why we need investments in community news gathering organizations or websites or TV stations, whatever it might be. Local news matters because stories like this would slip through the cracks otherwise. That can't be underscored enough. Dave Ehrenberg, let me get your sense on both that. First of all, the tortured path this case even took to getting prosecuted. It had to clear a number of obstacles put in place by those who didn't want it to be prosecuted to get there. And then your overall thoughts on the verdict. Any surprises, slightly different? Each defendant picked up slightly different guilty charges. Give us your overall sense as to what happened last week.
Yeah, Jonathan, these defendants walked free for 10 weeks before charges were finally brought. And when they were brought, you had multiple prosecutors have to recuse themselves. And one of them is facing charges, as Reverend Al said, and a second one is being investigated. And as far as the difference in this case than the Rittenhouse case, I think that you had two things. First, you had the star witness being the video. The video was so shocking that even Governor Brian Kemp said that the state investigators needed to intervene. That video was key in this case and was much clearer and much more devastating than the videos in the Rittenhouse case. Also, you had a prosecutor, Linda Donikowski, in this case, who was able to cross-examine the one defendant who decided to testify, Travis McMichael, and destroyed him on the stand. And that was different than in the Rittenhouse case, where the defendant did pretty well. The prosecution didn't really lay a glove on him. Here, you had the prosecutor expose all of his inconsistencies. The guy said it was a citizen's arrest, but he never reported that to police. This was something they came up with as they got closer to trial. He never told Arbery that he was making a citizen's arrest. He never saw Arbery steal anything. And so what this prosecutor did was to leave the jurors with the impression that the only crime that these defendants believed that Arbery was committing was jogging while black.
Yeah. Hey, so, Dave, you bring up a great point. Facts matter. The law matters. The prosecution of that law matters. And you look at the Rittenhouse case and you look at the Arbery case and you had great variance in all of those things. I, of course, would start with some of the laws that I think need to be changed in Wisconsin, where I, a citizen of the state of Wisconsin, where, you know, people, 18-year-old kids, he was 17, but I'm saying even 18-year-old kids can be walking around with AR-15s, open carry. I think that's just menacing, using David French's words, even if you are a fearsome advocate for the Second Amendment. And also, based on the law of Wisconsin, you had a very broad self-defense standard in the state of Wisconsin. And then you had a prosecutor who many people believe had a tough case to prove in the first place. But some say he wasn't quite as effective as he should have been.
Yes, there are two different cases, two different sets of facts. It was a very tough case for the prosecution, and their key witness just was terrible. This Grosskreutz in the Rittenhouse case, he actually helped, I thought, the defense. You didn't have that in the Arbery case. Another issue in the Arbery case, you had a self-defense claim, but it was contingent on the citizen's arrest claim because these defendants were the initial aggressors. There's no doubt about it, unless they could show they were making a citizen's arrest. But that fell apart upon cross-examination when it was exposed that they didn't tell anyone they were making a citizen's arrest. This was something they created for the jury. And so these are two different sets of facts. And I think as a result, you had a just verdict here. I'll leave it up to the legislators in Wisconsin to change the law up there for the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's up to the citizens, obviously, of that great state. I've got to say one other thing we should bring up, Mika, before we go is that we've obviously been critical of Brian Kemp from time to time over the past several years. Certainly, we commended him for actually telling the truth about the election. But it's important to remember, as we talk about reporters that did the right thing, Brian Kemp was deeply offended by this video from the very beginning and immediately called for an investigation, got the Georgia Bureau of Investigation on that case, too. So you actually had, from the start, people rightly offended by this video. So a lot of people worked together to bring justice in Brunswick, Georgia, this past week.
State Attorney for Palm Beach County, Dave Ehrenberg, thank you very much. And still ahead, how amateur online detectives helped the FBI track down a January 6th rioter before he left for Air Force basic training. Plus, opening arguments begin today in the high-profile trial of Ghislaine Maxwell. We'll have a preview of what to expect in court. And nearly 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic, the world is now racing to contain a new strain. Doctors Zeke Emanuel and Peter Hotez join us with more on the threat from the Omicron variant and whether the U.S. is prepared. Morning Joe is coming right back.
Let the word go forth all over the world
yes.
that a jury of 11 whites and one black in the deep south stood up in the courtroom and said that black lives do matter. Let it be clear that almost 10 years after Trayvon, God used Wanda and Marcus's son to prove that if we kept marching and kept fighting, we would make you hear us. In the state of Georgia, a state known for segregation, a state known for Jim Crow, and you turned it around. You took a young unarmed boy that they thought was worthless, and you put his name in history today. Years from now, decades from now, they'll be talking about a boy named Ahmaud Arbery that taught this country what justice looks like.
Go beyond the headlines with the new MSNBC app. Get real-time analysis from live blogs to in-depth essays, video highlights from your favorite shows, and the latest updates on the 2024 election. Visit msnbc.com/app to download.